You're listening to Peculiar Planet. I'm your host, Lee Michael. Eventually, everyone gets used to the sounds of their home. The dishwasher, the dryer, the creaky staircase, and even the traffic outside. I grew up in a small house in the south of England, just a few miles from the sea, and I remember the sound of the boiler turning on every time someone used the hot water. But what do you do if a mysterious sound suddenly appears in your home? A sound that persists for hours on end and doesn't go away for months at a time. And even weirder, all your neighbours claim that they can hear it too.
In the 80s, all of a sudden people started hearing this loud, low-pitched hum. I mean, I'm not going to do it justice if I just go, but that was sort of what it was.
So this is Bob.
My name is Bob Heyman.
And our first story today takes place in Sausalito, San Francisco.
There's a houseboat community in Sausalito, California. And I probably lived there from 1975 or so.
And Bob, I've seen modern day photos of these houseboats, and they're so unique and really beautiful. But how did this community first start?
So they started after World War II when they had a whole lot of landing craft that they had built to invade Japan. And then when they didn't invade Japan, they sold a government surplus. So these were the kind of things you see in movies about D-Day, where they would send them to the beach and the front would drop out and 30 soldiers would come charging out of them. So they had a lot of those, all of which was sold after the war and made their way to Sausalito and people started living on them.
And back then, could people hear this long, persistent humming sound that you were just describing?
No, back then nobody heard the hum. The hum did not become audible until people started either building new boats or, in my case, transplanted onto one of these big cement barges. Think of a floating cement shoebox. And people would put bedrooms down in the barge. So people started living below water and spending time below water. And all of a sudden, people started hearing this hum, this loud, low-pitched hum.
Weird. And how long would the sound go on for?
Oh, hour. I mean, a long time.
And did anyone know where the sound was coming from?
No, nobody could figure out what it was. And a lot of us, not just me, thought it had something to do with the Navy doing sonar experiments because there was a submarine base, you know, maybe 20 miles away.
They thought maybe it was like a Russian submarines or aliens or, you know, all kinds of weird theories. Then someone talked to a fish biologist.
The story that I heard, and this could be urban legend, was that they called Pacific Gas and Electric and somebody came down to the docks and it was a fisherman. And he was like, oh, that ain't the wires. That's the plain fin midshipman, the most talented of fish.
Yep, you heard that right. One of the most popular theories believed by fishermen, scientists, and government workers alike is that the humming sound was generated by a fish called the plainfin midshipman.
Hi, I'm Kirk Lombard. I run a sustainable seafood company. I wrote a book called The Sea Forager's Guide to the Northern California Coast. Also, I'm a musician and my wife and I have a sea shanty band where we perform sea shanties.
Oh, really? Can you give us a quick example? Do you sing?
Ships may come and ships may go as long as the sea doth roll. Sailor lad, it's like his daddy loves the flowing bowl. When your money's gone, it's the same old song. Come along, come along. No, I'll never shut up.
Oh, okay.
That kind of thing.
That was unexpected, but truly glorious. Thank you.
Right on, man.
So, Kirk.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit more about this fish?
So the first time I saw one, I just stared at these things. I thought, what the hell am I looking at, man? It's just, they have like a ugly frog-like face with these eyes and its big mouth. They got spots all along their sides, these kind of weird spots. And that's how they got the name midshipman, because they have these two rows of what look like buttons. And it looks like a naval midshipman's dress uniform from the 19th century. And then their body is covered in photopores. And if they're eating a certain type of plankton, it causes those photopores to light up like light bulbs. So their bodies will look like a Christmas tree. So like they have this otherworldly sort of alien look.
And of course, one of the most remarkable traits of the plainfin midshipman is that it sings. Or rather, just one of the sounds it can make is a hum. I caught up with Professor Andrew Bass from Cornell University and his former student Ni Fong, now at Yale School of Medicine, to find out more about this peculiar fish.
The main thing you hear at night in certain areas of these bays is the hum of midshipman fish. It completely dominates the acoustic landscape. I'm serious.
You can find them all along the coast in California and up in Washington. And at night, they'll chorus together and make these really beautiful sounds.
Now, obviously, I really wanted to hear this sound. And Andrew and Nee provided me with a few recordings, which I'll play for you now. But just to warn you, it may sound like something is wrong with this podcast or with your headphones, but all the recordings sound like this. This is the humming sound of a single plainfin midshipman. And the recording just goes on for hours and hours.
It's pretty monotonous and it can last for up to 2 hours at a time. And they're basically singing an entire night. So they might take a breather after 2 hours and they'll go on again.
And you know, we just listened to a lab recording of just a single fish. And when you consider there must be what, like thousands of these things in the bays around California and Washington State, well, it's no wonder that people could hear it.
Right? It's amazing, right? But here's the thing. On a really quiet evening up in the Washington State area where we work, you could be standing on the shore and you can hear it. It's very cool.
No way. You've done that? You've heard that?
Oh, yeah. But it lasts all night long because different fish are out there humming. And yeah, the sounds are pretty loud, actually. And that's the way I never cease to be amazed by it. I never get bored of listening to these sounds.
Now, Andy,
yes.
I've been speaking with a few residents in the Sausalito area, and some of them simply refuse to believe that this sound they hear at night, you know, this persistent, almost mechanical humming sound, is being made by a fish.
Oh.
And one gentleman in particular, an engineer named Joe Tate, analyzed the sounds coming into his houseboat, and he concluded that the sound was coming from the sewage plant nearby. So, based on all the wild theories, the gossip, and the hearsay, how sure are you that the sounds the residents are hearing are actually being made by the plainfin midshipman?
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about it. They're known to be abundant in San Francisco Bay, okay? And when we went out to San Francisco, we visited the houseboat owners. People had tape recordings of the sound, and absolutely, those were hums coming from these midshipman fish. The sounds absolutely match.
Okay. So when you put it like that, it does sound quite convincing. Nee, how is the midshipman making this sound? Like, I'm assuming they don't have lungs and vocal cords like humans do.
Yeah, good question. They have a air-filled swim bladder that all fish have to, you know, navigate the waters, but they modified it to be kind of a drum. So they have these sonic muscles that are attached to the side of this modified swim bladder, and these muscles contract at a rate of 100 hertz.
100 hertz. Oh, God. I'm trying to remember my physics classes back in the day at school. Can you remind me what 100 hertz means?
It's like 100 hertz, 100 times per second. It contracts at 100 times per second. They're actually one of the fastest contracting muscles in vertebrates.
Wow, so this is like one of the fastest known muscles in existence?
They're reaching the top, yeah.
So to help you appreciate just how fast this is, imagine you have a wooden block in your hand and you start to hit the block once every second. Now hit it 10 times faster. And to get to 100 times a second, speed it up 10 times more. This is the mechanism underlying the unique humming sound of the plainfin midshipman. But Nee, why does it make this sound? Like, what's its purpose?
That's a great question. So they spend the winter in deep waters, and then they migrate back to shallow waters to breed. So the male midshipman fish make a nest in the summer along the shallow waters of the intertidal zone. Basically, they excavate a little hole under a big rock, and the males will then sing to attract females.
Ah, so it's a mating call, you know, to attract females to the nest.
Yes, the humming sound is the courtship call that attracts females. Once the females come, they lay eggs on the top of his nest, and then they just leave. So the moms leave, and then the dads stay behind all summer to care for these eggs. And he can accumulate eggs from multiple females. So if you flip a rock over, you look under there, it's like, imagine caviar that's orange colored, but all kinds of different shades of orange. You know that because they're in different stages of development from different females. And once these little fry hatch, they, I think, just swim off into the ocean.
Aww. And lastly, before we started recording, you mentioned that the midshipman can make another sound, a kind of grunting noise, and that this sound is used in an aggressive context to kick out other males from the nest. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The grunt is a much shorter call. It sounds like, like... like, I'm not pleased that you're here. Get out of here.
That to me, it sounds like what it is. It's just like, because if I made that sound, you'll be like, that guy isn't very happy. I'm like,
He's not happy. He doesn't want me here. Yeah.
And Nee sent me a recording of this noise. And as you can hear, she isn't actually that far off. Hello everyone, it's me again with just a very quick message. Peculiar Planet is a brand spanking new show and entirely self-funded. So if you are enjoying the show, please tell your friends about it and share it on social media. Every listener truly counts. Also, if you'd like to hear more episodes, please consider supporting the show by making a donation on our website at www.peculiarplanet.org. That's peculiarplanet.org. However peculiar the story of the plainfin midshipman may be, it isn't the only time that fish have been heard inside people's homes. Our next story begins back in 2005, in Cape Coral, Florida, and centers around a scientist named James LoCascio, who, at the time, was a young, fresh graduate student.
Cape Coral is located in Southwest Florida, and it is poorly named because you'd be hard-pressed to find any coral there that wasn't on someone's bookshelf.
But it is a cape, right?
That's also a stretch. It's a very common strategy in Florida to name things in ways that maybe isn't so accurate, but it sure does sound nice.
And James, for a while now, the residents of Cape Coral have been complaining that they can hear a long, persistent, thumping-like sound. Can you tell us a bit more about what they were hearing?
They were hearing a low boom after nightfall, kind of like boom, 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 boom. And, you know, they just can't figure out what that is, and they can't get to sleep because of it. Dogs also were bothered by it. People who had dogs in their homes reacted to it more so. They said the dogs just won't stop pacing. It won't relax.
That's so strange. And at the time, the local residents were urging the city council to spend nearly $50,000 to hire an engineering firm to identify and hopefully stop the noise you just described. But you reached out to them with a different explanation, that it might be the mating call of a fish called the black drum. What made you think it was the fish?
Well, the black drum is a pretty common fish in the Gulf of Mexico. And knowing that black drum spawn in the winter times narrowed the possibility down even further. And so here we have sound going on during the reproductive season of the species. And it just kind of seemed to me, well, what else could this be, really?
Right. And when you suggested it was the fish, did they listen to you?
They listened to me, and then they approved to fund a small project at about a tenth of the cost to do a study.
And what did your study involve exactly?
I went down to the locations, the neighborhoods, where people had mentioned they were hearing it. And I walked around and I knocked on people's doors. And I said, how are you? said, they'd answer the door and I'd say, have you been hearing strange sounds at night in your house? And I explained it all. And I said, would you be interested in participating in this study? And so I had little notebooks prepared with just logs, date, time, and score the level of the sound that you hear. And people kept those journals. At the same time, I put some recorders out in the water. And when I received the notebooks back, when they were saying, hey, we're hearing a lot of sound, now we're going to the hydrophone records and comparing the timing and levels and showing how they match up.
And here are the sounds that James recorded around the waters in Cape Coral. And these sounds, James, do they match the mating calls of the black drum fish?
Identical.
So there must be pretty much a smoking gun.
It was a smoking gun. Yeah, it was a smoking gun. Yeah, exactly. It was proof positive. And so, you know, we were able to show that. And then we did a little bit more with one household that had a retired science teacher in it. And she was just thrilled to help. And they made their home available. And one of the things we did was we had a hydrophone in the water, a hydrophone in the house, and then used the geophone and put that in the earth, in the ground. And we could see that the signal made in the water was also the same signal was detected on the geophone in the ground and the hydrophone in the house, showing that the source is from the water and the source that's in the water is a fish.
That is such a neat little experiment. Thank you, James, for telling us your peculiar story.
Yes, thank you.
So far in today's show, we've heard two stories where fishy noises sparked nothing more than simple curiosity. However, these peculiar sounds once escalated the tension between two countries, raising fears that the world's first nuclear war was ever closer.
So when I grew up in the 1970s, 1980s, we always were fearing a third world war. Now, afterwards, we know that the Soviet Union had rockets ready to be launched with nuclear weapons, and people were really sitting 24/7 ready to launch these rockets. So it was extremely severe.
So this is Magnus.
Yes. So my name is Magnus Wahlberg, and I'm an associate professor at the University of Southern Denmark.
And our final story today takes place in Sweden during the Cold War, a 45-year-long conflict between NATO forces to the west and Soviet Russia to the east. Now, Sweden were officially declared neutral, but that didn't stop them from coming into frequent conflict with Soviet Russia.
Yeah, so in 1981, there was a Russian submarine who ran on a rock in the Swedish archipelago, not far from a Swedish marine base. It simply got stranded there and they couldn't get off the rock.
And I just need to butt in to tell you this quickly. This submarine was known by NATO forces as a Whiskey-class submarine. So naturally, the media referred to the incident as Whiskey on the Rocks.
And this was a huge thing, right? Could be interpreted as an extremely hostile enterprise by the Soviet Union. And a year later, there was a huge submarine chase. So the Swedish defense, they said there were four hostile submarines, presumably Soviet Union submarines, very close to another Swedish naval base. And they closed this whole fjord with nets. So they said, we got them. They are somewhere in this fjord, and now we're just going to bomb them up. And nothing really happened. They never found anything. And then it went on every year, sometimes several times every year. The military would say, oh, there is another submarine. And they started a hunt. Nothing came up. And the prime minister, he wrote this very hostile letter to Boris Yeltsin saying that this has to stop now. This is ridiculous. You have to stop all this and you cannot continue making war with Sweden.
So something is clearly going wrong. They keep detecting enemy submarines, which then actually don't seem to exist. So I guess this raises the question, how exactly were the Swedish military detecting these submarines?
Sweden at this time was having actually a very impressive naval fleet. So they had a lot of submarines themselves. And these submarines were equipped with sonars and they were also equipped with microphones. But then you also had permanent listening stations where people would sit and listen 24/7.
Right. So most of their evidence was based on sound.
Yes.
But what were they listening for?
There were then three types of sounds that they heard and that somehow they had determined for themselves that this must come from a Russian submarine. So one was called the cavitation effect. And this sound actually sounds a bit like a propeller.
And by propeller, do you mean like...
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. But then it was something strange because when they started to measure these sounds carefully, it turned out that these sounds were found in waters that were only half a meter deep. This is strange, right? Because how can the Russians be with a big submarine in 0.5 meter deep waters? And then there was one observer, I think one of those foot soldiers, who saw once when they had detected this sound on some of the military hydrophones, they would see a mink swimming at the surface.
A mink, like a small otter or kind of like a ferret.
Yes, exactly. And they swim between the islands, so they are very good swimmers. So then the military themselves, they brought in a few minks and they put them in a pool in their headquarters, and then they recorded these minks. And when they swam, they made this fluff, 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 fluff sound, just like this cavitation effect. And everyone had a good laugh about this because they had mixed up this submarine sound with these minks. But then they said, oh, it doesn't matter because we have other evidence. Okay, so what is the other evidence?
Right, the second sound. And that was called...
What's called a 347 tape. And this is a 3 minute, 47 second recording made out in the Stockholm archipelago. And I think around 10, 15 years ago, the military decided to make that one public. So they just put it on the homepage and said, now we can judge ourselves. It's been classified all the way along. And then for several minutes, you hear this... boat. This is clearly a boat. It's also kind of a voff, 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 voff sound. And they had checked and checked again that there were no other boats in this area. And then the logic is, well, if there's no boat at the surface, it must be a submarine. But the problem was, as soon as they put it on this homepage, there was this guy calling in and said, this sounds like my boat. And then the military went out and recorded his boat, and it turned out it was exactly the same sound.
Right, so the 347 sound and the cavitation effect were all ruled out by the military.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Which then brings us on to the last sound, which was known to the military as the typical sound. And this is where you and Hokum, your boss at the time, come into the story. Can you tell us a bit more?
So a majority of the hostile intrusions were all caused by recordings of the typical sound. Typical sound was then this third sound that was still unexplained. And therefore, the government got interested in, we really have to figure out what is this typical sound. So they pushed the military to make sort of a civil / military investigation. So they were supposed then to invite experts on hydrology, because maybe this could be explained by sediment movements. There was also meteorologists. Could it be explained by waves? And then there should be some biologists trying to explain if the typical sound could come from animals. So we went to the biggest naval base in Sweden for the first meeting. And that was really like stepping into a James Bond movie. So the whole base was sort of built into this mountain. And then you come into this bedrock conference room where there is this huge table and there are all these military people sitting there. And then there were all these very esteemed scientists, so, you know, professors of meteorology and oceanography and so on. Then they said, okay, for the first time, we're going to play you the typical sound. And your assignment is to try to explain this as not being a submarine. And then the military guys, of course, smirked because they thought it was an impossible thing, because of course it was a Russian sub. So they were a bit like, haha, try this, right? And then they played the sound. But what they played then was like something that sounded like the sound when you fry bacon. So kind of a hissing and popping sound, like a... And, you know, they play that for half a minute. And I always be like, was that it? Was that the right tape you played? That was not the submarine. And they were all sitting there being very convinced. And we were like, that doesn't sound like a submarine at all.
Well, not to me anyway. And when you and Hokum first heard this, what were you thinking it could be?
This is where we struggle with our memory, because I think we both think we came up with it first, of course. Because we thought it sounded very much like when you release gas underwater, like a bit like a bicycle hose that is leaking, these kind of bubbles coming out. Within this committee, our assignment was to look for biological explanations. And we thought, if this is going to be biology, it must be some animal who releases gas.
Right. And this is when you both thought the gas could be coming from herring, which is a small silver fish that lives in mid-water. Why did you think herring might be responsible?
So both Håkan and I, we knew that herring, they actually can release quite a lot of gas from their swim bladder. But if you then have 1 million herrings, this phenomenon can become quite violent. And I had my own personal experience because when I was up there in Norway, the water was just boiling around us because there were thousands and thousands of herring releasing gas at the same time. It was actually quite scary.
And these releases of gas are known to scientists as fast repetitive ticks, which just so happens to spell out the acronym FRTs, or farts for short. Positive proof that scientists do indeed have a sense of humor.
So I went to the supermarket and I bought a few herring. And then I went down to the lab and I connected an underwater microphone to an aquarium and a film camera. And then I put down my hand with the herring and I sort of squeezed. So I was sort of kind of squishing them. You know, I bought maybe 20 herrings and not all of them had gas in the swim bladder. But what came out was not very, it didn't sound good. And then on Monday, I came back and I told Håkan, well, I actually gave it a try, Håkan, but it didn't sound all right. And then he came back down and then he took a herring and he just squeezed it extremely gently. Like he got this fine series of bubbles coming out. And every time there was a bubble coming out, there was this kind of quick, quick, quick sound coming.
And these are the sounds that Magnus and Håkan recorded that day.
And then, you know, we sent in these recordings of the squeezed herring to the Navy. And then almost immediately we had a call back and they were like, oh my God, that's it. This is the closest anyone has been, you know, so what is it? And then they got a bit disappointed when we told them. But it was not perfect because the frequency content was not perfectly aligned with what they had recorded. So they wanted some more realistic recordings. So after that, Håkan suggested, what about if we design a whole naval operation where it's all about chasing down herring schools? And the military said, sure. So they made like a big naval practice or exercise where the assignment then was that some surface ships, they should find herring schools and then the Swedish subs should move into these herring schools and make recordings. What they told us afterwards was when they did that exercise, they got tons of typical sounds. So they all of a sudden said, okay, now we are convinced. And then the boss of the whole Swedish military and the chief of the marine and the minister of defense, they all went out and said, well, the typical sound was a herring and probably not a submarine.
But I should clarify that although much of the acoustic evidence for foreign submarine activity was later discredited, several Soviet, Russian, and even Danish submarine commanders have told journalists that they frequently entered Swedish waters during this time. So foreign submarines did exist, it's just that the Swedish military were looking for evidence in the wrong places. Magnus, I'm now so confused. What is the conclusion to this story?
I think the conclusion is that we, or at least the Swedish military, hasn't learned anything. Because a few years ago, there was again an attack, they said. And it was again caused by some mysterious sounds they heard in the Swedish archipelago. So all the boats were out again. The chief of the Swedish Navy was on TV saying, we got them, we know they are there, we have very strong evidence, and it's this sound recording we have. And it became clear that what they had hunted was actually a civilian weather buoy from the Meteorological Institute. So it was a bit like the history was repeating itself. And I was just thinking, oh my God, they really haven't learned anything. So I think the take-home message is you have to be very careful with military intelligence, if there is such a thing. And you also have to be very careful with what military personnel and also politicians tell you before you're convinced that that's actually true.
Peculiar Planet is produced, recorded, edited, and narrated by me, Dr. Lee Michael Howarth. Branding and design were kindly donated by the incredibly talented Vera Babida. Thank you to all my guests on today's show, as well as Xavier Moy, Milton Love, and Aaron Rice. Special thanks to Vera, Pascal Dubois, Auntie Shirley and Uncle Mike for all their constructive feedback. The main music used in today's show was donated by Kinkas Marea. Sound effects and other music were made by members of the Free Sound online community, including Rodeo Clash, Satuniman, Sven Sound, Inspector J, ERH, Stevius42, Tosha73, Chillsville and Dana Mack.